afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and joining me today is LA-based Legal Eagle, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much, Simon. Pleasure to be here. Happy Sunday to everyone.
All right. And, of course, no program would be complete without our good friend John Perry, who I actually think Dos Equis should have used in their beer ads as the most interesting man in the world. John, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Simon. That's high praise. Real quick, I'd like to retract all my negative comments about the IRS last week after speaking to my accountant. They're an agency filled with integrity, conscientious employees. I look forward to them implementing Obamacare with limited resources. Keep up the good work, guys. How's that,
right,
Mike?
Are we scared about an audit?
Not at all. My accountant just says you can't be prudent enough with those people.
And also joining us this week is my good friend, author, chicken wing aficionado, barkeep, and general troublemaker, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome to the program.
I'm going to shut up after that wonderful introduction and not say anything. I don't want to ruin that. People think about me. Thank you for that introduction, Simon. Hello, Peter. Hello, John.
Hey.
Hello, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Okay, before we get into the serious stuff, I've got to tell you some funny stuff. A couple of weeks ago, I read a press release for a product, Potty Mouth. And it's a little gizmo that you can attach to your toilet. And if the toilet seat is left open for more than 30 seconds, it talks to you. It screams, you know, what are you doing? You know, close the seat. You know, obviously, it's aimed at the, you know, women folk, you know, who always growl about the toilet seat not being down. But it's just more fun than you can shake a fist at. I actually got a review version, and I didn't install it, yeah, because my wife would have too much fun with it. But wonderful product, and anyone that wants to get a great gag gift. It's www.potty-mouth.com. Okay, enough of Potty Mouth.
I think we're just getting started with Potty Mouth. That's what I think.
Well, can I make a comment on that, Simon? Because even though you and I haven't spoken, you guys are talking on the subject of toilet seats. A woman in Liberty, Ohio, that's a little bit north of us, our good friend Ashley Brooks is from Liberty, was that she glued herself to the toilet seat at the women's Walmart and tried to make it look like somebody else did it. And the firefighters had to extract her from the toilet seat. It happened
what
last
night.
What was
the stated purpose of this? What was she trying to accomplish? Was this some sort of protest or something?
No, I think what she was trying to accomplish was sue them, saying someone else did it. They were negligent in not cleaning down their toilet seats, and therefore she would be like that McDonald's coffee lawsuit, get a $800,000 or something.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, but when they were extracting her from the toilet seat, the firefighters, or in this case, who'd want to be the first responder, right? But anyway, they were. And they extracted her, like she was clutching her purse so tightly it fell out, and the super glue fell out of her purse. It's a true story. Truth is stranger than fiction, as they say.
Yeah. Busted.
So, this is funny. And John blamed it on Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Always goes back to him.
Yeah. Right. You know, Obama should ban the use of superglue.
Yes.
It should be a controlled substance.
I just can't imagine anybody putting their bare bottom on a toilet seat at Walmart. I mean, that to me is just insane.
Yeah, I mean, that alone is pretty scary. But think about it. But in this case, this woman had ulterior motives, shall we say.
Disgusting.
How much that would hurt to rip it off your skin?
I'm in pain just thinking about touching that toilet seat. That's all I can think about.
Obviously, you brought up correctly. Just a little scatological humor there for everybody. But
scatological, the best kind of humor there is. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to more interesting things, but still very much in the potty mouth genre. It's old news. Jodi Arias. And Peter, I know that the legal stuff changes from state to state, but the Jodi Arias case has me really, really confused. The jury had no problem returning a guilty verdict, first-degree murder. Likewise, they had no problem agreeing that there were aggravating circumstances, thereby opening the door to the death sentence option. I understand this so far. I'm not entirely dumb. I'm also led to believe that it requires a unanimous verdict by the jury for the death sentence to be imposed. If it's not unanimous, then the death sentence is off the table and life imprisonment, is the deal. So how come that didn't happen in this case? How can you possibly have a deadlocked jury situation with the death penalty phase?
Well, let me ask you, Simon, and let me just ask everybody else. Two questions. First question is, do you think that she's guilty of the murder that she was charged? Do you believe that she did exactly what they accused her of, stabbing him 20 times, whatever it was, killing him, etc.? I mean, everybody seems to believe the answer to that question is yes.
And the jury did.
Yeah, okay, so now, you tell me. Do you think she should die for that?
No. What I'm saying is that...
Well, no, but the question is that. I mean, that is what the jury is being asked to vote on. They're being asked to say, now, do you, jury, want to kill her because of this? And those are two, unfortunately, or fortunately, those are two very different questions. And the jury is having a difficult time, or some members of the jury are having a difficult time saying, yes, we want to kill her.
Right. But everything I've read leads me to believe that to get the death penalty, you have to have a unanimous verdict.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because the notion of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt in the minds of many means that if one person on that jury doesn't vote in favor of it, then that in and of itself reflects some reasonable doubt. So the unanimity aspect is required for the higher burden of proof standard in a criminal proceeding, especially a capital punishment case.
All right. So, you know, these 12 people couldn't agree. Eight said yes. Four said no. You know, how come that they have to reconvene a new jury?
Because that's what happens whenever you have a hung jury. Whenever you have a hung jury, that service by those jurors is over. I mean, they've been pushed to their limit. You've gotten everything you can out of them. That their service is done. Now the prosecutors have to decide if they're going to retry the death penalty phase. Personally, I think they should just drop it. But if they want to, they can. And they get one more crack at it under Arizona law. They get one more crack. And if they don't get a unanimous verdict the second time, then that's it. I think it's crazy to even give them a second chance at it. To me, the fact that four jurors initially concluded that she shouldn't get the death penalty, to me, creates reasonable doubt as to that aspect of the punishment right then and there. And they shouldn't even go forward. But that's the law in Arizona, and they have the option to proceed if they want. I don't know if they will, but they do. And
okay, here's what really bothers me. The difference between a hung jury and a unanimous verdict. If one person had said, no, let's not top her, she'd just have got life imprisonment. But because four of them say, let's not top her, now we're going to reconvene a new jury and do it all over again. Boy, that sounds like double jeopardy.
It sounds problematic to me. It really does. I don't like it at all. But it may be challenged on appeal. It may very well be challenged on appeal if, in fact, she goes through a second proceeding and they find unanimously that she is guilty such that she deserves the death penalty. I suspect that's the kind of case that could go up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court would have to analyze the issue of whether or not that violates double jeopardy, or if that—I think double jeopardy is one of the challenges that would be raised if it violates criminal due process, requiring proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't know if this has ever been challenged or tested before this Arizona procedural law. And it may never come to that because the prosecution in Arizona may elect not to proceed. I don't know, but I agree with you. I share your concern. I think they had their chance. I think they gave it their best case, and I think that jury ruled. And I don't think she should be tried again on the issue of the death penalty. I think that issue has been answered, and I think the hung jury reflected the fact that they shouldn't be allowed to get the death penalty against her. That jury lived with the entire case, and they were with her, you know, throughout the entire case. And I think they were in the best position to make that decision. And if they couldn't reach it by the requisite beyond a reasonable doubt standard and unanimous verdict, then that's it. I think it should be game over.
Well, Sam, you're a layman just like me. I mean, Don't you find it odd? You know, we don't get to top of this time, so we're just going to assemble a new jury, and maybe we can top her next time.
I don't even know how they could even find a non-biased juror in Arizona after this trial. That boggled my mind. It was so high profile. How are they going to find someone who hasn't been influenced? And I happen to agree with what Peter just ended his comments with about that jury's been there from day one, and the fact that four of them couldn't pull the trigger, as they say, is enough for me to say life imprisonment, and they shouldn't waste taxpayers' money and go on. That's how I see it. I just don't know how they could find 12 jurors in Arizona who aren't been influenced by this case in one way, shape, or another.
Right. And of course, Arizona has its own issues. You know, no juror can be Latino. Sheriff Joe looks after that aspect. John, do you have any thoughts on this subject?
Well, a couple things. The issue of double jeopardy is an actual goal because a verdict wasn't rendered. And personally,
but
I would find
No, wrong. A verdict was rendered.
Not on the penalty.
The jury could not agree on the death penalty.
That's a hung jury, Simon. There's no double jeopardy because the verdict wasn't rendered. It's up in the air, right?
No, she was guilty.
It's a hung jury as far as the penalty phase.
Yep, that's correct.
So there's no jury verdict rendered, so there's no double jeopardy, Simon. It's just most states don't have a second bite at the apple, a term Peter's familiar with, because the judge would just give her life. Arizona's different, that's all. They can retry the case. But I'd like to say I would find it more difficult to impose a death penalty on a woman because I think they're more sympathetic figures. So I'm sure people are struggling with that. And also, I don't know if this crime rose to, say, capital murder where there's another crime involved like a robbery or rape or there's multiple victims. So I think it's a very difficult case to even get the death penalty against a woman.
I think John raises some very good points there. I think that's true. I think the double jeopardy issue, I think technically he's correct, but I think there is a challenge there on appeal. If they do retry her and they do get the death penalty, double jeopardy will be tested on appeal, and there'll be an argument that for all sum and substance, it constituted a second trial. But even if double jeopardy is not the right challenge, there'll be other challenges. But the bigger points that John made are absolutely correct. As heinous a crime as murder is, there are some sometimes murder is committed and people find it difficult to impose the death sentence for a variety of reasons. And other times murder is committed and people feel very strongly about giving the death penalty, and it really raises issues about things we used to study in law school about issues of moral culpability. How bad do you think a person's behavior really was, irrespective of the act itself? And it requires you to get into the mindset of the person, and things like multiple people being killed for no. You know, you had no relationship or knowledge or past history with these people. Things like that tend to make it easier for a jury to give the death penalty than homicides that arise in interpersonal relationships just because
and criminal
of
history.
Yeah.
Everything.
Criminal history, sure.
Hey,
sure.
Gentlemen, do you think that her comment she made right after the guilty plea in the first trial was completed had any influence on those four when she said she wanted to die?
I think they considered everything, but I think everybody interpreted those comments the same way. They were the kind of comments that someone who's young or immature or distraught or depressed makes. I think if anything, they have made her more sympathetic. I think that people can appreciate that in a dark moment like that, you say I just want to die, but. That doesn't mean that when it really comes down to facing that reality that you really want to give up on your life. And I think people identify with that.
Okay. I want to go back to my original question, and I'll be really blunt this time. Okay, penalty phase. You know, that there are aggravating factors. You got to have 12 jurors... Well, 12 in this particular case, that agree that, you know, the death penalty is valid. If you can't agree, then its sentence is mitigated to life imprisonment. So what went wrong here?
I don't think anything went wrong, and I think that technically the point that John raised earlier is correct. If you get a unanimous verdict in a criminal case, then that is the verdict. If you don't get a unanimous verdict in a criminal case, it's a hung jury, and the prosecutors get another chance. Now, we typically think of this in terms of the guilt or innocence phase. You know, what's the most recent example of this in recent history? I think of Phil Spector. You know, Phil Spector was tried for, I think, second-degree murder, and the first jury ended up in a hung jury, and the prosecutors, you know, felt very strongly about it, and they retried him, and they convicted him. And it's the same concept at every phase of a proceeding. I think, wasn't there a similar situation? You remember the Menendez brothers back in the 90s?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Weren't they also, I think they also couldn't get a conviction on the first time. They had a hung jury.
Had two separate juries the first trial.
And with the second trial, were they tried together or separately?
Together.
Well, I actually think it's probably better for them to be tried together. I think that's the right way to do it. But in any event, you know, the theory is that the prosecution has to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, and it needs to get a unanimous verdict. And to be completely acquitted, they also need a unanimous verdict. And if they don't get a unanimous verdict, then they've got a hung jury, and the prosecutors get another crack.
Okay, so you know, they're reconvening a new jury.
They might. They might. I don't know if they will. My understanding is they're considering it. They, you know, I think they recognize the same challenges that we've talked about, and, you know, prosecutors don't like to make a public issue of futility. I mean, I think they might seriously reevaluate it. I just don't know.
Okay. Right now, the new jury is set to go to work sometime in July. It still bothers me. I mean, you know, if this new jury doesn't come up with a unanimous yes, she needs to die verdict, can they just keep on going?
No. Under Arizona law, this is their last shot. If they go forward now and they don't get a unanimous death penalty verdict, then that's it. They're done. She gets life imprisonment. And even if they get a death penalty verdict, I think there's an extremely strong likelihood that that goes up on appeal, and that appeal could take years.
Oh, 20 years.
Well, I don't know if it's going to take that long, but I think that's something that might seriously make its way all the way up to the high court, the Supreme Court of the United States.
Okay. On the subject of the Supremes, they're set to be releasing a whole raft of rulings in the next few weeks. Do you have any thoughts on this session and what they're going to rule?
No, I don't. I wish that I could follow Supreme Court cases, but I can't. I have no idea what they're set to rule on or consider this session. Do you have any idea what's on their agenda this session?
Well, there's a couple of things about gay marriage, and that's going to be fairly interesting, I think.
Yeah, well, the general rule on something like marriage is that the state needs a compelling interest to be able to control something as private as two people's decision to get married. That's just a very clumsy summary of the law of constitutional analysis. I believe that a person's right to choose who they want to marry is basically a highly protected or fundamental right, and I think the state has to show a high interest to interfere with that right. And I don't know what the state will be able to show. And, you know, I think that's the test that's applied. This court, the makeup of this court may choose to adopt some other analysis, but, you know, that's basically the test, and I don't see what the compelling state purpose is to interfere with marriage between two consenting adults. But I guess we shall see.
John, you're the Snickers bar king of the entire universe.
I am.
You are. And you know Manny Barling?
Intimately.
Oh, I'm not sure how to put it that way. But
I know this is leading somewhere, Simon.
Well,
all right.
Lead me into the quicksand.
Oh, he will lead you to the gallows.
Please.
Oh, I wouldn't do such a thing.
Up the plank, yeah, okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Monsanto, let's talk about that company for a little while. Sam, you produced an interesting document.
Wasn't that
one that I
document?
Had seen before about who's who in Monsanto. Would you like to start the discussion?
Yeah, I never heard of Monsanto until I got involved with you gentlemen, and of course the infamous Manny Barling, and I read his books about how they're slowly but surely poisoning all of us with their food and their lack of food or whatever they're doing to our food. It's not good things. And they're a huge conglomerate that controls one of the few that has a engulf and devour hands in all our food supplies. And, of course, that means buying and selling politicians who rule on what goes in the food, what's on ingredients. And, of course, that means having huge lobbyists on to make sure they get favorable tax breaks, import exports, all that sort of stuff. And of course, they probably don't want people looking at what is really going into their food. So they hired a ton of ex-federal and state big shot in both political parties, mostly Democrats, I was shocked to see, who to work for them. And it's funny that a lot of these ex-politicians and appointed politicians and whatnot are all in, hold lofty titles with that company, and that company gets all sorts of goodies, especially under the Obama administration, that I think is a huge issue that Mitt Romney, but he probably was getting a ton of money from him too, and the Republicans didn't seize upon this last election. And I know they did something out in California, Peter and John. Weren't they the ones who fought some issue that was on your ballot and about labeling on food?
Yeah.
They didn't want all labels. They said it was going to cost too much money.
Yeah.
Is that correct? I just remembered that.
That's true.
Every big company fought that.
The what?
Yeah.
Big company fought that.
They didn't want to put all the ingredients on, all of them, on the food that they're poisoning everybody with. Right?
Right. It wasn't going to cost too much money.
No. It was an opposite fight.
Oh.
They were fighting the fact that people could put a label on their product saying it was organic. You know, no GM products are involved. And to me, it was stupidity. But Monsanto seemed to think that if people went around putting labels on their product saying organic, suddenly everyone would be buying organic rather than, you know, Monsanto GM, you know, modified products, you know, wouldn't sell.
Hey, Simon, a couple things. Mm-hmm. I think I said at the time that you could put a skull and crossbones on a Snickers bar, and I'm still going to eat it. And secondly, I take a backseat to no one in my admiration of Manny Barling. However, as I've told him, the problem with reading a health food book is one misprint can be fatal. So people need to remember that.
But Monsanto, Simon, correct me if I'm wrong, they have a lot of meat, they have a lot of former food inspectors, or even there's employees from Monsanto that work in our federal government allegedly overseeing the food supply, correct? FDA and whatnot, they sit on the boards of the FDA. I mean, they have a very powerful reach into our government and from our government to them, and it's an incestuous relationship that many of the big corporations or big shops enjoy in this country.
You are absolutely right.
Okay.
The FDA pretty much has become the golden parachute for Monsanto executives. It sucks. In fact, the Supreme Court is also part of that. Clarence Thomas, he was lead counsel for Monsanto for many years. And then he discovered it was more fun to leave pubic hair on, you know, Coke cans and annoy, you know, the people he worked with.
I don't remember that case.
You're kidding, right, Sam?
No, of course I am. Good old...
What was her name, Anita Hill?
Anita Hill send Clarence Thomas a royalty check every month? Because if it wasn't for that, she would have got no money?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she should. I mean, no one ever heard of that. But that aside, I think that opens up the big issue, Simon, is the really, and it's getting worse, and both Republicans and Democrats do it, is that, you know, the incestuous relationship between elected officials, appointed officials, whatever, and certain corporations, if not all corporations, you know, raking it in. You know, they're spreading the steel around, but it's having a bad effect, you know, for all of us. I mean, price fixing's going on, and what ingredients, what not ingredients are going in. I mean, you've got a corporation that's in bed with the government, especially with something as vital as food and food supply. It's a dangerous thing and not fair, and, you know, to all the other people out there. I mean, you know, they even had tax laws written that benefited them, if I'm not mistaken, that was signed right around the election time or right after it. That didn't even get a beep from the mainstream media because they were too busy talking about Mitt Romney's 47% comment.
Right.
I mean, Monsanto got a huge tax break that was signed right before the election. And,
right.
You know, nice to know Republicans. And that's something we don't hear about anymore. It's all we heard about for last year's election was the greedy corporations. The greedy corporations. Haven't heard diddly squat about that since the president was reelected.
Yeah, you're quite correct, John. You got any thoughts about Monsanto?
I love Monsanto, but eating health food is like number 35 on my list of priorities. So
that's pretty high,
right under Jody Arias. But Simon, it is below your opinion on any topical subject. I care more about that than Monsanto.
Yeah, but we should care about how Monsanto has such a far. The bigger issue is how quickly these ex-public officials or and whatever way, shape, or form. As soon as they're out the government door, they're in the door of the company that they just passed laws for.
Then we got to make a living. Come on.
I hope you're saying that with your tongue planted firmly in your cheek.
No, not at all. I'm saying eating health food. I don't shop at Whole Foods anyway, so I really don't care.
You just like pouring that. Monsanto's corporate logo is, don't you, John?
No.
Skull and crossbones.
Yeah. Well, my attitude, Sammy, is if it's good for Monsanto, it's good for the country.
Okay.
Enjoy those
Peter. Peter, I know that you're like me. We at least try to lead a half decent lifestyle. are you concerned about Monsanto?
Well, I am concerned about any and all large manufacturers of food products, just like I'm concerned about any and all large manufacturers of anything, because I think that their incentive, all of them, is to make money, and the incentive to protect and help the consumer is not their most important concern. I think their primary objective is to make money, and I think that consumers need to be aware of these facts and make informed decisions and, buyer beware. But it's hard. It's really hard to do. It's hard to for the average person to follow the data, follow the information, make the best choices, and they buy typically the most easily, readily accessible food that tastes good. And, lo and behold, we have record levels of obesity and diabetes and cancer and other problems, and I don't think that these things are disconnected. That's my personal opinion. But by the same token, other people will tell you that this is just evolution in technology, and quite frankly, people are living longer today than they did before. We live longer now than we did 100 years ago and 200 years ago and 1,000 years ago. So I am very concerned about it. I do shop at Whole Foods a lot, but I don't rely on Whole Foods, just that name in and of itself, to protect me, because I view Whole Foods as just another corporation trying to make money off of me. So, I read these labels, and it's hard. It's time-consuming. I don't recommend it to everybody. And my attitude is this. If I read a label and I don't understand what it is, I try not to buy it. But even that, in and of itself, isn't enough. The outcry over GMO, and just so everybody's clear, it's my understanding that GMO stands for genetically modified food, is that, companies like Monsanto have developed strains of grain and wheat or what have you, and they've genetically modified these strains, and they've produced strains that are supposedly resistant to pesticides and have greater nutritional benefits, blah, blah, blah. And that all sounds great, and maybe it's true. But there are other people who believe that these things cause all kinds of health problems because it's a modified, non-natural occurring food, and the body doesn't handle it very well. I don't know what the answer is.
And the people and Peter, what you said is brilliant, but you forgot to add one thing. And
oh,
the people
please.
The people who sign off for Monsanto to sell their crap works for them, or is going to work for them.
Well,
there's no one really there working for the consumer. I think that's what the point Simon and I are trying to make, and Manny does.
Well, I agree with that, and
that's scary.
It is scary, but I think consumers have to be mindful. They have to try to make intelligent choices and be aware. But I also know that that's very hard to do because people have a lot of work to do. They have families to raise. They have jobs to do. They work hard. They don't have the time, the energy, the effort. They need someone to help them. And I agree with you. There's nobody out there really helping them.
Right. But, why would Monsanto pour millions and millions of dollars to into preventing a labeling measure be passed, and all the measure said was, hey, we don't use GM products. Ours are all natural. You know, what's wrong with that? Sure,
well,
it costs a little more to, create the label, but hell, yeah, if you want to do that, why should you be denied?
Well, if you're asking me why we shouldn't have that label, I don't have a problem with having that label, and quite frankly, there are a lot of companies that use that label anyway. I see it on food products, but why would Monsanto fight that? Well, the answer is obvious. they can't label their food products non-GMO, and they think that if other people can say that, that might cost their sales something. And I'm sure they have additional arguments. I'm sure their additional arguments are research doesn't show, and it's scientifically unproven, and it's misleading, and it's going to cost more. But the real, in my opinion, the real bottom line is they don't want to affect their profit. And I'm sure if smoke companies, tobacco companies weren't required to put labels on their products saying that cigarette smoke was unhealthy, they wouldn't do it. And I'm sure that if alcohol manufacturers weren't required to put labels on their products that said, you know, this could be harmful to you if you're pregnant, they wouldn't do it. And it's just another example of one company's interest pushing against some type of regulation that they don't want to affect their bottom line with. And it's an age-old scenario, and we haven't seen the last of it, and this is just one other example.
Sam, I think you and I are on the same page here. Don't you think that, if you buy a product, the manufacturer should be able to put a label on their product saying no GMO?
Oh, absolutely, but unfortunately, or whatever they want to. I think the more, I think Peter just laid it really out, the easier and more things put out on labels for people to read, and get educated to read this stuff. That's what a good society does. That's what a good government is. That's what good, and that's what a good corporation does. I mean, I would think, but they don't. I mean, there's a reason why they're hiding behind that stuff. And when you do read about it, it's scary. It's scary.
I think the debate is that, because I do see non-GMO labels on food. I see those. I think the debate is whether or not, if I understand correctly, foods with genetically modified ingredients are required to label it as GMO. And that was my understanding of the issue. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't have a problem with that label. I don't. But you can see why Monsanto would fight it.
Sure.
Because if they have to put a GMO thing on their label, that is a real chilling deterrent to people to buy it.
Absolutely.
And I do think that people, it's like a warning label.
Mm-hmm.
And, if everybody's running around and saying, we don't carry this, we don't carry this, and somebody says, guess what, we do, come over here, I think that could have a real chilling effect on their sales.
And especially in a state like California.
I in any state, but yes, in California perhaps more so than others. Remember when everybody was upset with MSG, monosodium glutamate, MSG, and every Chinese restaurant would say, or Asian cuisine restaurant would say, no MSG, no MSG, and it got to the point where if they didn't say that, you wouldn't
go into it.
And I don't even know if it was true, and I don't think there was any way to test it. Like, they could just say no MSG, and they put MSG in there. There'd be no way to tell. But it got to the point where if you didn't say no MSG, people weren't going to go.
Well, obviously Monsanto knows they have to, being that it is a huge conglomerate with the food industry, and obviously food's a very important thing, it is regulated by our federal government, states and whatnot, and they're putting their people right where they're supposed to. That to me, where there's smoke, there's fire. Why does Monsanto, why do all these corporations buy these, you know, it goes back to someone once said, I can't remember who it was, I think it was a comedian, probably George
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
About they should all wear the labels?
Well, I was thinking of a quote that said it's very difficult to get somebody to stop doing something when their livelihood depends on continuing to do it.
Right. Okay. I understand that, but I think all the politicians should have to wear, and the people and the bureaucrats should all have to wear, like our race car riders have their label. Who owns them?
Yeah, I like that, too. That's a good one.
I mean, I think
sponsored by Monsanto.
Brought that up. I mean, I think it's true. When I sent that to Simon, and someone sent it to me, a good friend of mine who's very health conscious, it was amazing. And you also start looking into it. It's not just that, well, we're going to save money. We're inventing money for this. We're saving the consumers money. We're going to increase our food supply. I can imagine what the BS they go on with for this GMO. You really, Peter, you brought it up earlier. There's a reason why people are fatter. There's a reason why people are not healthier or whatnot. And it is some of the food we're eating in the fast food society is terrible. You know, I know there's a lot of people. And the other thing that Monsanto is one of the biggest suppliers for certain restaurant chains, especially. And in today's world, where both mom and dad are probably working, and they got a lot of kids at home, the easiest thing to do is to run them out to the, you know, for the $9.99 special, whatever it is, and it's full of crap. It really is. You know, I mean, there's a reason why Applebee's doesn't put their ingredients on their food menus, and other places do. Well, you know, more, you know, privately owned places, they want to bring that crowd in. They probably want to charge a little bit more money, but people want to know that they're getting good quality food for their. That. I mean, we have our ingredients. I mean, it's not much. I mean, at the bar, but you know, we put our stuff on the menus and ingredients, and we have. And I only buy stuff from people I know what I'm buying, ingredients wise. I mean, there's places around here that it's amazing what you can buy if you really want to go buy it and squeeze.
Sure that I've heard of stories where you know, they've tested for meat used in restaurants and in some ethnic communities, and it turns out to be canine meat.
Well, did you guys hear what happened? It happened about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, and the 35 TGIF Fridays around New York City, New Jersey area, they found, I don't know how they found this out, but the FDA, in conjunction with local law enforcement and whatnot, someone got sick somehow, and then it went up the ladder. 35 TGIF Friday restaurants, TGIF restaurants, were serving, ready for this, caramel, colored, food coloring caramel, rubbing alcohol, and pouring it into cheap scotch bottles.
Wow.
But they've been doing it for 5 years. 35 was all owned by the same, you know what I mean, investment group, whatever you owned it. Can you imagine how much money they were making off that?
Well, restaurants, you know, I'm sure you're an exception to this, Sam, but restaurants will stop at nothing to increase their profit margin. And I've heard of stories like this. I didn't hear of this one in particular, but
you talk about what else were they doing? That was the first thing I read. What else were they doing? You know, and that they would stoop that low just to and get that profit. And the only reason they got caught is because in that area of the world, it's become more and more immigrant. There's less middle-class white people going to these restaurants, whatnot. So they're not familiar with what scotch tastes like. You know,
well, just imagine all the things that you could do if you knew there was little likelihood of being detected or being caught or punished. You know, it's not just restaurants. It's across the board. It's everything. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly true in restaurants. I have my theories about all kinds of restaurant scams that are going on. And, you know, they make huge profit margins on some of these things.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, especially one like, obviously, you know, you just said it. The chains are the worst. The chains, if they're saving $100 a night at 35 restaurants times 7, do the math, right?
Yeah, I really distrust chain restaurants. I mean, I go to them like every other person, but I do have an inherent distrust of them.
Yeah, you go to all those wonderful restaurants that Manny's always taken John to. You don't go to any of those other places?
I don't get out much.
Peter to the El Paso. I hear that's the best place in Southern
What's
California.
El Paso? That sounds good.
That place sounds really good. I want to get there someday.
John, how would you feel if you discovered that the Snickers bar you bought was a fake?
I would think with the 165 ingredients, it is. It has been modified.
Yeah, I was trying to say, what's a real Snickers bar?
I thought it was organic. But a couple things. You got to have balance in life, Simon. That's what everyone forgets. It's common sense to me. For instance, after today, my flagellation session with you, which, by the way, I'd like to thank you for, spares me the expense of a dominatrix for the last year. Saves me a lot of money. But, for instance, after speaking with you guys, I'm going to go to the gym, hit the weights, go on the treadmill, and then I'm going to drive to one of my favorite restaurants, look up at the menu, and tell the guy, supersize me, amigo, because it's convenient and it tastes good, and I don't have a lot of time to waste. So I'm not sitting on the couch playing video games, eating Cheetos and bonbons. That's the problem. People aren't exercising. You got to have balance. And you guys are pushing this labeling, but you know, Simon, truthfully, you're not going to be happy till like Bloomberg, someone like that, is telling us what we can eat and what size. And that's the ultimate goal, because you got to allow people to make mistakes. God knows I make them every day, but that's part of life. Allow us to choose for ourselves and make our own mistakes and treat us like adults. And just have balance in life. If you're going to eat bad stuff, exercise.
Hey, John, what are you going to do at the gym? Are you going to do some bench press? Are you going to do some squats?
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm in pretty good shape, believe it or not.
Well, you sound like it. You sound like, so I just want to,
I eat what I want, when I want. I quit smoking a while back. I'm not against smoking. I never thought it affected me adversely. When it got to $6 a pack, I just said, I'm not paying that. But point being, people have a right to make their own decisions and make mistakes. I'm not the national chef. And just because, like, smoking now that I'm a non-smoker, I'm not going to go around telling people, oh, put that out. It's offensive.
Let me ask you a question. I saw an article the other day about how they were going to cut back on meals in the military. You know, you got these guys in Afghanistan and these deserts fighting, and they get these prepared meals and packages and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about they were going to cut back on their food rations or something. I don't know, but one of these soldiers in the field was holding up one of these packages. And, you know, I could read the label on the picture, and it horrified me to see those ingredients on the food labels. I mean, those guys in the trenches, they don't have any choice. They got to eat whatever they get is part of their ration.
Why do you think so many of them smoke? They're worried about getting shot.
Well, I feel bad that they have to eat stuff like that, but you know, generally speaking, I agree with what you said, which is that people have to make their choices. I guess some people don't really have a lot of choice, but I think people should be informed and make choices, and we should try to help them. I do think we should try to help them.
No matter how informed I am, I'm still going to make bad choices in your mind. Can you accept that and just say, there's nothing I can do?
I can certainly accept it. I certainly can. But, you know, there are people who aren't educated. There are people who are young. There are people who are old. There are people who, for instance, are in the military. There are people who just don't know.
So people who just can't make their own decisions. And by all this excessive labeling, you're going to convince them to eat healthy.
Well, you know, I know it's a bad thing to say in the world, but I do think that sometimes we need to be a little paternalistic. I think there are different people in the world. I think some people are more capable of making intelligent decisions than others. And, you know, that's the way life is. We have many followers and few leaders. It's a gigantic version of a family. And if you care about your family, you care about everything about them. And if you think they're doing something wrong, you try to get them to make the right choice. But generally speaking, I agree with you that, you know, in the end, the only way to really control this is to have people make intelligent choices and have their freedom of choice. I just would like to see them get a little help, a little extra information.
Sam, I want to bring you in on this.
Okay.
Right. You run a bar and restaurant, and I'm sure that you serve GMO stuff, because, you know, you have to.
Without it, yeah, because we do a lot of deep-fried stuff.
Right.
You know, so the wings are not, I can guarantee you that. The meat we buy and all that, and vegetables we buy fresh from a, fresh in the summertime, there's a farmer's market and stuff that's really good with local people bring their produce to. So it's also half the price of going to the grocery store, you know. But, no, like that's, you're right. I mean, some of the stuff you're forced to. There's no one else. I mean, Monsanto and others, whether they're just giant monopolies. You know, the federal government's a monopoly. Monsanto's a monopoly. That's it. I mean, look what we're always up against that. And that's too bad. Cause it's a,
hey, Sam, let me ask you, what percentage of your customers ask the ingredients of your hot wings?
Oh, well, we have them out.
Okay, but they're at a table, they're ordering.
Oh, no, on the menu, if they're reading off the menu, they just said they want to eat. I agree with you. John, I agree with you. And I go with what Peter said. They
what
didn't come to the bar to read the
would
ingredients.
Would you say even look or ask you what the ingredients are?
So how many? Probably want less than 1%.
I don't care. So what difference does it make if they're labeled or not? That's my point.
And it's a valid point, but I also agree with Peter 100%. People should know.
Okay, for the
1%,
you've got to spend all this money.
No, they don't have to spend money. I mean, you know, we should know. You should know. It shouldn't be. You know why? Because buyer beware is great when the guy out front isn't trying. When the guys at the sellers aren't trying to stick it to you. And we live in a society, and it gets worse and worse, where everyone's sticking it to the buyer. And sometimes the buyers haven't been educated correctly.
All right, Sam. If you're really sincere on this, when people order hot wings, you should demand, hand them a piece of paper, and just say, I just want you to know these are the ingredients and this is what you're ordering.
Hey, John, I will tell you one thing, though. 90% of the people look at the ingredients on the beer cans. They'll ask to look at one, or the wine, or the liquor. You know why? Because the ingredients are there. So that kind of shoots a balloon and shoots a hole in your balloon. I am amazed at how many people are always reading the alcohol content, what's in there and whatnot, what kind of flavors, especially in the craft beers. So there's, you know, there's two sides to that story.
Well, no one I've ever been out with.
Well, maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe you don't call almost everybody
John,
I know. Cause...
John, you hit all the fine dining areas like, you know, Dairy Queen and Burger King. You know exactly what you're going to get.
John,
no, like,
you know
when I go to a bar, I go up and order drinks for the table, and no one asks me, like, any questions about what's in it.
Well,
I'll just say, give me five beers and, you know, two glasses of wine or whatever.
I'm amazed at how many people, and I think a lot of it has to do with the different. There's so many varieties of beer, wine, and liquor out there now. People want to see. They already know they're putting alcohol in it. They want to see what else they are. And I applaud them for doing that. I look at it.
Well, maybe Simon's right. You have a sophisticated clientele.
I don't have a sophisticated. No, John, that's the weird part. I don't. But they are sophisticated when they when it comes to certain things, you know. And I think part of my thinking is it's because it's conditioned to. They want to see what's on it. They like reading. I think a lot of it, they want to see what the alcohol content is because the laws have changed to make it more the alcohol in it. But mostly it's mostly the beer drinkers because of there's so many different beers out there now. And I think they want to see, hey, you know, what it is. Hey, I'm killing myself with the alcohol. I want to make sure there's nothing else bad in there that's in there, you know.
I don't know, Tom. I drank enough Miller Lights to know what it tastes like.
Oh, figures. I'm surprised you're not an MGD guy, John, because that used to have, what's the stuff, the embalming fluid in it for years.
I like light beer.
You know, light beer. You drink Miller Light? I'm so disappointed.
I like all light beer. Bud Light, Coors Light. Miller Lite.
You know what I used to love Mickey's Big Mouth. Those
John, Peter, in college or high school?
That was more college days for me.
But you're an alcoholic. Like that's malt liquor.
I used to like those little grenades. Those were awesome.
All those little companies
awesome.
Are gone. You know, they've all been bought up by...
Is Mickey
you talk
still
about
around,
Monsanto.
Or are they gone?
You're
still
about
around.
What? Yeah, you can get them, but they're owned by... They don't get pushed. They get pushed in... The Mickeys and all that stuff, the malt, that's, you know what, that's all sold at the package store in the ghettos, okay?
Yeah, that's hardcore alcohol, Sam.
What?
Yeah, well, I used to have a Mickey's in one hand and a Wild Turkey
in
the other. That was a good night
for me. John, no one, you know, of course it's all based, you know, and, but let's take it one step further. Look at everyone to this day still thinks Budweiser is an American-owned company. It is not. It's owned by a Belgian company.
Yeah.
All these big corporations, the Monsantos of the world, are gobbling up everything, and with that, it's a bad for the consumer.
I think Belgian company bought out Budweiser, right?
Belgian company owned Budweiser. That's correct.
Yeah.
I think Miller and Coors are still U.S. owned. You want to drink a great beer? I don't know if you have it in California or down in Mississippi. It's called Yingling. It's from Pennsylvania. It's one of the oldest breweries in the United States, and it's a great beer.
What they have out here that I like? Rolling Rock.
That's another good one.
Yeah. That Rolling Rock's a good one. Very reasonably priced and a good beer.
That's from Pennsylvania.
Yep, that's from PA. Yeah, that's a good deal. There's a couple breweries around there, but I'm amazed that, and I think a lot of it is it's again the ingredients come down to there's so many different varieties of beer flavors. I mean, I never thought I'd ever see raspberry flavored beer,
no.
You know, and I wanted to see what was going in there. You know, I mean, how could you make this beer taste like raspberry? You know, and all that, but, you know, and you do that, and I'm in the business, so I have to have it, because people do ask me, and I think it's a great thing.
Okay, Peter, you were about to jump in with something.
Oh, a couple of things. One thing is, not to go crazy with it, but people don't realize it is hard to avoid this stuff. For instance, okay, so they make genetically modified grains and wheats and breads and cereals, and you think if you eat chicken or beef, you're avoiding that, but you're not, because they feed that stuff to the chickens and to the cows. So it's pervasive. It's across the board. And we were talking about making beer. Beer is grown from grains and hops and things like that, and it's pervasive. It's pervasive. Another article I read today, which is a little bit off tangent, talked about how filthy ice cubes are in many fast food restaurants. I don't know if anybody saw this, but a lot of these fast food restaurants, the hygiene quality of the ice that they put in your soft drink, according to these articles, is worse than the hygiene quality of the water in the toilet. I kid you not, that's a direct quote. Google it or search it. And the biggest violators are supposedly fast food restaurants, because they have ice makers that they don't clean, and they clean their toilets regularly, but not their ice makers. So, I'm sure the human body has cultivated a number of defense mechanisms to these things. And, I don't know how much of this stuff you can drink or consume before it actually causes any harm, but I'd prefer to avoid it.
Right.
That's just me. I'm crazy like that. That's okay. I don't think I'm going to be mindful of getting ice in my soft drink next time, if I even had one.
Okay. I want to switch gears, because it's time to wind John Perry up, and probably Sam Moffey. Pundits point out that no second-term president does not suffer from scandals. It seems to be just par for the course. Right now, Obama seems to have a few issues. None are quite up to the level of Watergate, that Nixon lived through, or Monica. But we have a number of scandals just hanging out there. There's the infamous Benghazi. That's one that just won't go away. We have the IRS with the Tea Party and the DOJ, Department of Justice, targeting journalists at AP and Fox News. Who wants to jump in on that one? John, you would be my favorite first
respondent.
Yeah.
All right. I don't really know what you're asking, Simon. But as far as this touching Obama, it probably won't, because I do believe the media has too much invested in him, and they're going to come crawling back to him eventually. But I was thinking that his whole strategy and all these scandals he appears to know nothing about. From what I understand, outside his door, there's a do not disturb, do not enter sign. So he could have been unaware of all these scandals and out playing golf or vacationing. That's my theory.
All right. Do you think Nixon was unaware of the Watergate scandal?
Certainly, initially he was. But when he found out, he tried to cover it up. And that's what got him in trouble. Rather than throwing everyone under the bus, he tried to cover up for his subordinates. And that's what got him in trouble. He tried to squash it.
Oh, okay, and Clinton with Monica.
Well, he clearly tried to cover that up. How about Reagan with Iran?
Can you say? These scandals are they're all hot button issues for certain demographics. I know Sam is concerned about Benghazi because his son's in the military, and other people because they've been harassed by the IRS. I guess it just depends where you stand. But he's always going to have his defenders, so we'll see how it plays out.
So, John, if I'm getting this correct, you pretty much view second term, president scandals as being the norm, that there's nothing to worry about.
Whether they seem to be the norm, yeah, as far as recent history. I mean, I don't know how far back you want to go, but, yeah, I guess people get complacent, and that's why people mix up their cabinets to start anew. And as far as Eric Holder, I don't really care if he resigns or not, because I think he reflects Obama's character and integrity, and it doesn't really matter who the attorney general is or any other cabinet member. They're going to represent and implement the top guy, his policies. So all these people who think by getting rid of Eric Holder, things are going to be better in Washington, I don't see it.
Right. Honestly, I don't see, threatening Holder under the bus is really going to.
I mean, I knew
anything.
he was scandalous when the one who facilitated the Mark Rich pardon in the last day of the Clinton administration, the biggest tax cheat in the history of the country, was pardoned because he contributed to Clinton's campaign. So that was how long ago? So this guy knows where the bodies are buried. He's only going to go if it's his desire, because they got to keep his mouth shut for what he's done the last 20 years. So I don't know. Maybe someone will write a book about it in a few years. Sam, maybe you.
Not me.
Get to the bottom of this.
I wouldn't mess with that Eric Holder. That guy has got far-reaching tentacles and is going to, because you're exactly right. He's one of them, has been, and
where the bodies are buried.
He knows where everything is, and he's a terrible attorney general. I mean, I think that that's obvious. I do agree with you. He is the president's, if he's the chief law enforcement official in the country, you're in deep trouble with your Department of Justice, and that's what we got. And I think, as I found out today, at least I heard, is that Congress, I don't know if that committee, but I don't know if it was Republicans or Democrats, have interviewed the actual IRS agents in Cincinnati, and those agents are saying there was a directive from above.
Well, of course.
Okay, of course. Right? Gee, what what a surprise. And I think it was, and I think it's just one of many things that presidents do. Do I think Obama started this thing? If it's not him, if people close to him, he might not have given the order, but he nodded his head yes.
I'm sure it goes up to either Axelrod or Valerie Jarrett.
It's got to go up there. If it goes up to Axelrod, it goes up to Obama. If it goes up to Holder, it goes up to Obama. At some point.
Not necessarily. They might allow him that deniability.
John, sometimes you have to hold the boss accountable, whether it's your business, my business, Simon, Peter. Sometimes we're accountable for the actions of our employees or of our own children if they're underage or something of that nature. There should be no difference if the president. He's going to have to be held. He is not. I agree with you. The media has not held him accountable, but he's taken a rightfully so. He's taken a beating because one thing the people who aren't the smartest people on the face of the earth, who don't have time to read, are too busy out trying to survive. The two things scare them. One, they don't want the IRS snooping at them, and they'd be pissed if the IRS is snooping at anybody else on orders from.
But not anymore, Sam, because half the country doesn't pay federal income tax anymore.
They still know about the snooping, John. I agree with you on that point. They don't know what the IRS don't deal with the IRS, but they know what the IRS can do.
I don't think they care at all. They don't have a dog in the fight.
Okay, well, I do, so we disagree on that. We agree to disagree. I also think they know about they want to see a free press. They want to be able to watch Bonnie Boo Boo, whatever they want to watch, whatever they want to do. They don't want the government censoring that, or they don't want the and it was the Obama administration's target of James Rosen and other the AP people was the first people thought as as Peter pointed out, who the hell wants to go over how many times James Rosen called his mother and father? But then it really went into his emails, and the strangest thing is when I read about this, they knew who his source was.
Right.
So I don't understand what the big deal is, but, you know, then why are you using...
It was to send a message to the press. Come on.
Exactly. I agree with you. And that scares me, and I think it scares the average person. You don't want to... He has nothing better to do. Here he is 4 months into his second term, 5 months now, and he's engulfed in stupid scandals, government paralyzed. The stock market's going up, so a lot of people don't give a crap. But right now, what's going on? The Middle East is, you know, you've got... I can't believe that there hasn't been some huge summit between him and Putin about these missiles going to Syria. I mean, the 300 missiles are going to go to Syria. You got Hezbollah over there. Just had an armed engagement on the Syrian border with Lebanon. They've got troops over there. The
but
Iranian...
you know what, Sam? I honestly believe Putin knows more about what he's doing in the situation than Obama.
You're probably right about that. Obviously, Putin.
I trust his judgment more as far as arming the regime. Well, and I don't know anything about it, but.
Look, they're selling weapons. You know, we've got a de facto, we've got another de facto Cold War going on right now.
He's Assad, and we're supporting the rebels, right?
Just, that's correct. Yeah. De facto, you've got another Vietnam coming here. And then,
but
you
the
know,
thing
then,
is, Sam, who are the rebels?
I don't know who the rebels
thing
are.
In Egypt and Libya, we don't even know, right?
I agree with that. I think Rand Paul has made that point time and time again. What are we going to arm people for?
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe
Putin knows that the rebels are worse than Assad. I don't know that to be the case.
Well, John McCain thinks the
rebels.
Your buddy John McCain thinks that they're great, John. He wants to arm the rebels.
I know. I don't think he says that. But, yeah, he's for supporting the rebels, of course.
Because he's a warmonger. This is one of the things where I have to agree. I'm glad the president hasn't gone in head first like Bush did into Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I mean, look what's happened there. I think Iraq had more killings this last month than they've had since before the surge happened.
Yeah.
And my son being in the military, yeah, I do worry about it. I worry about all the kids that are out there. Because, you know, on one hand, they're told they have to go do something, and then they have to answer. When my son and some of his friends are here, my son's been home. He's going back, leave Sunday, or not Sunday, Thursday. So I've had a great visit with him before he goes back into the war zone. But when him and his veteran friends and current ones are telling me who they have to stand down to, civilian contractors, CIA guys who are out there, why have we deballed our military? Why even have a military if you're going to fight the wars with civilian contractors who are getting paid triple what my kid's getting paid, and my kids are more of a risk to getting shot up than these civilian contractors because they're mercenaries. Our government's gone
You hit a real hot spot there, Sam.
Thanks. I hope so. It really pisses me off. They don't have to answer to anybody, and they make boohoo amounts of money. I thought our government was broke only when it comes to paying the real men and women who wear uniforms, because these guys are getting paid great money, corrupt as can be. They're in bed with just the black market, and the CIA's neck deep in all this stuff and playing all sorts of games. And you know, my son says, it's great, we're out there, everyone hates us as it is, and then we've got drone strikes killing everybody. We have drone strikes in Pakistan. We're not at war with Pakistan, maybe we should be, and we're killing people in their country and with our drones. So we've got more people to deal with who are going to cry and get thrown when you're not looking.
So no, the point I was making is that, you know, folks in the armed forces really don't earn that much, but I talk fairly frequently with private military contractors. I think that's the term. And that's a whole different deal.
So their budgets haven't been cut. Isn't that funny? More money's going to them and the drones and all these secret weapons. And they say, well, in the current administration is, well, that's because we have to, it's safer. That's the BS line. It's safer.
Sam, let me ask you, when your son does his time and gets out of the military, he could go make a lot of money working for Halliburton.
He doesn't want to.
Well, that's what a lot of people do.
Well, I know, but he doesn't want to because he doesn't want to be a mercenary, and he knows how much it hurts the guys who are doing the other things, and he says they're all crooks anyway, John. They're all stealing supplies.
They offer a lot of military people good jobs.
I'm just telling you what my kids and his friends say. They're in the military, okay? They'd all love to get those jobs, but they're never going to get them because they're honest. Those guys are out there, guns disappear. You know, bullets, this and that, they're selling
stuff. A lot of those guys are retired military.
And they know all the skeletons are buried, just like Eric Holder does, and it's a scary thing. It's terrible, again, that starts at the top, we have a hunger strike at Guantanamo, all these things, what is this president going to do? You know, I'm very worried about the situation in Syria, not the IRS. The IRS is going to take care of itself, and the situation in Syria is bad, and I can understand, because look what they got away with at Benghazi. Look what the terrorists got away with at Benghazi. So why not fuck around more in the Middle East? And this guy Obama's not going to do anything. They're going to blame it on a video, and the Republicans and Democrats will yell at each other. Meanwhile, they're going to still sell us weapons. We're going to be able to do all this, what is all that? I'm sure all those rebels and all those crazy radical terrorists will all run around imitating Hillary Clinton. What does it matter? What does it matter? America's not going to do anything. Israel they're scared of, but they're not scared of the United States today.
Hey, Sam, let's talk about Gitmo. Bunch of people go on hunger strike. I say, fine. You know, let them go on hunger strike. And if they die, they die. Yeah, it's a file you can close. But no. Yeah. We apparently are force-feeding them.
Right. Because we're civilized. I guess on one hand, we're a civilized society, and that's what we're supposed to do. But we don't give them due process in the first place. which makes us under, which makes us bad as they are. I think we've talked about this. I think that, you know, my feeling is pretty simple. First of all, I still can't understand how we have a base in a country that we don't trade with on the same island, but that's a whole other issue, right? Gitmo's on Cuba, and we hate Cuba, and Cuba hates us, and but we still have a little base there. I've never figured that one out at all.
Oh, we were in West Berlin.
Well, yeah, because of the that one I understand, because that was a direct partition after World War II. I mean, that one's easy to understand. Gitmo, I don't understand. But anyway, what I don't understand is that we've got guys that have been accused of crimes. Let's accuse them of a crime. Let's give them due process of law. Put them on trial. We did it. If they were criminals, the mold was broken with Nuremberg when it comes to this stuff. We showed the world back then that we could put people on trial, give them their rights. They got due process, and they were found guilty, and they were punished accordingly. Let's do the same thing with these people. Put them on. That's what this country's supposed to be, a country of law. That's supposed to separate us from the from these tin horn dictators, these strong-arming, these tyrants and all that stuff. Our courts are supposed to be for that. We're supposed to have faith in it, and that's what I'd like to see.
Hey, Sam, what laws did these people break exactly?
I don't know, John.
Well, then how can you put them on trial?
They shouldn't be held then, should they? I don't know anything. That's the scary thing.
And
I don't know what
to put them on trial for what? Fighting in Afghanistan? I don't think that's breaking a U.S. law.
I don't know what they did.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. I know there's prisoners there. I don't know what they've been charged
with. Well, Sam, then don't advocate putting them on trial. There's nothing to try them for.
So why are they in prison?
Because they're enemy combatants.
They're prisoners of war.
Yeah, basically. But there's no country.
What, John,
for.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to get you on this one, buddy. Where have we declared war?
I said there's no country that they're representing, no flag behind.
But wait a minute. We are not fighting a real
war,
John.
They're at war
with
us.
We haven't declared war on anybody.
Who are we going to declare on?
So you can't be an enemy combatant if you don't have a war.
That's what I'm saying, enemy combatant.
How can they be an enemy combatant if we're not at war with anybody?
Because they're at war with us.
Peter, am I wrong on that?
Well, technically, you're saying there needs to be a formal declaration of war, but I view the definition of war a little bit more broadly. I mean, we're on the battlefield every day. We've got soldiers on the front line, and they're fighting, and they're in harm's way, and that's war, whether it's
why would you declare it, then? That's
well,
what the Constitution says.
It's a war on terrorism. It's a war on terrorism.
Peter, but you have to declare war. I mean, I don't understand that. You know, that's what we have a Constitution for. Let the Congress declare war, fund it accordingly. Then, John, I have no problem with what you're saying. Those
who do we declare war on, Sam?
Hmm?
Okay, why don't you just put the 160 people on an airplane, fly them to The Hague, and they can be tried in the world court.
For what, though, Simon? I would like to ask Peter if they've broken, he thinks, any U.S. or international laws. I don't know. I'm asking you.
I suspect you're right, John. I think that they're prisoners of quote-unquote, war. And,
what are they
we're
doing
out there
other than fighting for their beliefs?
They're fighting. They're enemy combatants in an ongoing struggle or conflict, and I suppose there's some thought process that they're too dangerous to just release because all you're doing is putting them back on the battlefield to fire at you again.
Right.
They'll
try to kill us again.
Yeah, and so I don't think that there's any. I think John's. I think you know. I'm not an expert on what's going on there, but my sense of it is exactly as you've described. They're dangerous enemy combatants, and what are you supposed to do, release them?
How do you know that? You don't know what they've been charged with.
Sam's saying
bring them
to this country and try them. I don't know for what. What U.S. laws have they
How do we know if someone didn't like somebody's that they were profiled? I don't know. We don't know what they've been charged with. It's all a big secret.
You're absolutely right. We don't know. So I can't either.
I can't either comment. I know that we don't know what they've been charged with.
All right, but. Why can't you just ship them off to The Hague and let the World Court deal with it?
I mean, they won't take them. That's a great idea, but why would they want to accept that?
And if you don't want to release these guys back into the hostile forces, and you let them out of your control, then you've basically, in the minds of some, just put them one step closer to being back on the battlefield. So I don't know what the answers are, and Sam's exactly right. I don't know enough about what these people are charged with. I suspect that what John says is correct. I don't think there's anything you can charge them with. They're, you know, we had drone strikes a month or so ago, taking out key members of Al Qaeda because we believe they posed an imminent and immediate danger and threat to the interests of the United States. And if we're launching drone strikes that take out people that we believe are imminent threats, why would we release people that we believe are imminent threats?
Right.
And some of those.
I mean, Sam, a lot of these people probably, I don't know, but they were in Afghanistan shooting at our troops.
John, again, I don't know. I don't know. How do I know one wasn't? How do we know that someone didn't make a mistake in arresting them either? I mean, we can play both sides.
We really don't know
the facts.
I got to believe they were taken off the battlefield.
Let's just say
they were trying to kill us.
You got these people as prisoners of war. You know, you engaged them. They were there. They had guns. Whether they shot at you or not, I mean, they're prisoners of war.
Well,
they're the
case,
enemy.
If take this thing on the war on terrorism, that means the two Boston kids, the survivor of the Boston terrorist, should be an enemy combatant and be a good Gitmo.
Because they committed their crimes on U.S. territory, Sam.
How do you know some of those people didn't do that? Or the United States?
I don't know. But to me, it's totally different. That was in Boston. Not Afghanistan.
If we're at war, they're combatants. The war is everywhere then. Isn't the war everywhere? The war on terror is everywhere. And
living in a country and another force comes in and you shoot at them, that's not a crime in the country that's invading, is it?
Say that again?
If you invade a country and the indigenous population shoots at you, like the Taliban at us, are you saying that's a crime?
Okay, I've invaded a country illegally?
The U.S. invaded Afghanistan.
We invaded Afghanistan illegally because we didn't declare war.
Some people shot back at us.
Well, I'm pretty sure that any country that gets invaded is going to say it's an illegal invasion.
Yeah, of course. But you see my point. You can't say that's a crime against the U.S. when they're just shooting at people who invaded their country in their eyes.
But wait a minute. We can't say it's a crime, but then we take some of those people who are doing that and stick them in Gitmo. Because
they're
going to
kill us. It's common
sense. Don't know what they've been. See, the problem with John, the problem is I can't. If I knew what they were charged with and whatnot, and why they were picked up, and why they're sitting there, why they're willing to go on hunger strikes and whatnot, and because one of the worst things to be able to do is to do that, then I could answer your question more intelligently.
Some of it is like re-education. They're trying to convince them, we don't mean you guys harm. Become good citizens of the new government. And these people are not going to.
There's a new government. Yeah, he's the most honest politician in the world.
You know what I'm saying. It's an attempt.
Right, Simon Kadze, your favorite.
Right.
It's just an attempt to try to demilitarize them in their thinking, I would guess.
Winning their hearts and minds, John. I bet you favored that thing too, right?
Yeah. I'm big on that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Give them some Snickers bars and soda.
Inside every Afghanistan is an American dying to get out, right?
Hey, you put a McDonald's there, it goes a long way. Kentucky Fried.
Okay, gentlemen, I do have to interrupt. We're going to be off air in about 90 seconds. So I want to go round the table and get your final thoughts. I'm going to start with John Perry, the most sensible person.
All right, Simon, good to be with you guys. Appreciate all your opinions, even the ones that hammer me. Thanks a lot, Simon. And I'd like to end it with the IRS rocks. Thanks for doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
Perfect. Sam.
I am, after this great conversation with you guys, as always, I look forward to it, and I look forward to next Sunday. I am going to get in my car, drive down to Sam's Club, get a bunch of Snickers bars, and I'm going to personally go to Gitmo and hand them to all the people on hunger strike. Maybe that will help them.
It would work for me.
Oh, dear. Okay. Finally, you know, we have the one and only sensible person speak to me.
Well, I'm going to go seek an injunction to prevent Sam from force-feeding Snickers bars to detainees in Gitmo, because I think that constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. So there you go.
Touché, Peter.
And I'm glad that John Perry has kissed and made up with the IRS. I was worried that those two weren't going to get along. So I think all is right in the world. We've solved all the world's problems for today. But I think a week from now, we'll probably have a few more that we need to solve.
Indeed. It's been a real pleasure talking to the three of you. I really wasn't quite sure where the program was going to lead today, but I just knew it would lead somewhere. So thank you enormously, and we'll be back next week, and we can do it all again. Until then, thank you so much. And we'll be back. Bye.